Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I welcome everybody tonight to this council meeting. Roll call is next, and we have all council members here tonight. And next on the agenda is citizen input. If there's any citizens here that would like to address the council on council issues, raise your hand and come to the microphone and state your name and address, and I'll give you up to 5 minutes. Go ahead, Sean.
This might be my last chance to say anything as a citizen, so.
Can you give us your name and address, please?
Yeah, my name is Sean Bates. I live at 1156 East Juniper Street here in Othello. The City of Othello Tourism Analysis document titled 2012 Tourism Funding Request has a staff recommendation amount that I want to bring to council's attention. In January, I was here addressing council to show me the money. Remember me yelling at y'all? I'm not going to yell. And I also want to apologize for getting grumpy that day, and I promise to not yell today. I also want to publicly apologize to the Samuel Crane Festival for any misunderstandings or hurt that or harm that they may have felt as a result of my comments back then. And I'm here tonight to go over some figures, point out some challenges, and also offer some solutions going forward here in 2012. And I made a copy of the state law, RCW 67.28.1816, Lodging Tax, Tourism Promotion. This deals with 2%, or it's actually 4% revenues from the hotel motel lodging taxes. Section 1 says lodging tax revenues under this chapter may be used directly by local jurisdictions or indirectly through a convention and visitors bureau or destination marketing organization for the marketing and operations of special events and festivals and to support the operations and capital expenditures of tourism-related facilities owned by nonprofit organizations described under this under subsection 501c3 and sections 501c6 of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 as amended. Now, let's see. A year ago, the Othello Outlook wrote an article titled Budget Talks Light Up City Council. And according to that article, the Greater Othello Chamber of Commerce President Janelle Anderson projected a fireworks expense of $7,000 total for the year that we're in here, 2011. The following week, the Outlook clarified that the City of Othello was going to provide $2,500 from the general fund for fireworks. So that leaves $4,500 of tourism dollars previously routed through the chamber going to fireworks from the $7,000 figure for the display that we saw this year. The city has always paid the full amount for fireworks. It has just been routed through the chamber in the past. As of the last council meeting, now the city has cut out the chamber as the middleman and the chamber no longer needs to front the money for fireworks. This year's staff recommendation for the chamber is the maximum guideline amount of 30% for the entire tourism dollar budget, or $14,276. The challenge I have with this is the fact that the Greater Othello Chamber of Commerce will not have the projected expense of $4,500 this next year for fireworks. And I doubt that it's council's intention to overpay the chamber by $4,500. I think it's just a simple oversight. So I propose the following win-win ideas. First, I propose that the $4,500 the chamber will not be spending for fireworks next year be removed from the chamber tourism disbursement and utilized differently. The amended dollar figure for the chamber would now be $9,776. The chamber suffers no harm and that they will not be spending that money anyway, and then the city may, in accordance with state law, directly spend those tourism dollars on fireworks, which would ease the burden on the city. I think it's the general fund helping to pay $7,000 that was reported in last week's Othello Outlook. Secondly, if the council would rather, you could do something else, which is that you could stay with the plan to use the already dedicated funds for fireworks on 4th of July this next year out of the general fund, and instead of using tourism dollars to supplement the fireworks, the council might elect to fund the request, which will be submitted this evening by the Othello Sandhill Crane Festival, and also give serious consideration to the additional funding requests made by the Othello Art Gallery at the previous council meeting. In my humble opinion, tonight's request by the Sandhill Crane Festival is for more help from the City Hall is modest, and given the impact on the incoming tourism dollars, deserves more than a passing glance. Furthermore, the Old Hotel Art Gallery serves as the de facto welcoming committee to Othello tourists due to its status on the National Historic Registry, its caboose display, and the visitor center inside that has brochures and information available to the interested traveler. It's shameful to me that the Old Hotel Art Gallery, which receives 40 visitors per week, is currently projected to receive a measly $2,776 for the entire next year. To put things in perspective, 40 visitors a week, that's more than 2,000 visitors per year who make their way through the Old Hotel doors, and these visitors are here from out of town. Because the Chamber of Commerce office housed within the Old Hotel is only open 2 or 3 days a week, the Old Hotel picks up the slack in greeting travelers and helping them get information about local attractions and sightseeing opportunities. In point of fact, the Old Hotel is a regular welcome wagon and does a lot for our local businesses like lodging and restaurant establishments and the other tourism attractions we have in the Othello area. And we really do take it for granted that they will always be there. So in summary, I propose that the council reduce the chamber tourism allotment by $4,500 because they're not doing fireworks next year. By doing this, council could either use those dollars on other existing entities like the Old Hotel Art Gallery or the Sandhill Crane Festival, or directly spend the $4,500 for fireworks. Thanks.
Thank you, Sean.
Now, I'm going to have some beers.
Oh.
Good night.
Good night. Any other citizens would like to get up and address the council? Okay, then we'll close citizen input. Do I hear a motion for the approval of the agenda?
I'll make that motion.
Ken Johnson? Do I have a second?
Second.
Mark Schneider, second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, that passes. Do I hear a motion for the consent agenda?
I'll move.
Okay, Dan first, Ken second, Ken Kaler. Okay, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, good, that passes. Okay, current business. 4.1, consideration of Othello Sandhill Crane Festival requests. Dixie?
Good evening. I am Dixie Fultz with the chairperson of the Sandhill Crane Festival, and I'm here to make a request from the city. We, in the past several years, the mailing list, which is the lifeline for the Crane Festival, contains about 1,500 mailing addresses, has been kept for us through the Irrigation District office. And because of a change in their personnel, that's no longer available to us. I would like to see that list brought over to the city and maintained by the city. It takes probably less than 60 hours, but we're going to estimate 60 hours a year. And our biggest thing is that this is something that is, as I said, is a lifeline for the Crane Festival. To put this on somebody's home computer and take a chance on losing it is just not feasible in my mind. And I don't know where else to go that would have the security and the backup that the city would have, since the Irrigation District is pushing us out. And so that's my request, that this mailing list be transferred over to a city computer and be maintained by the city. Any questions for me or?
Questions or comments?
What's the, can somebody explain, I saw this earlier about something with credit cards. What do credit cards have to do with a mailing list?
The mailing list comes from our registration forms, and on those registration forms there are credit card numbers. So it's very, very sensitive material, and we need to keep this upgraded and keep our mailing list current. We have it set up so that after 5 years, if we have not had contact back from people, the names drop off, to try and help keep from mailing out 1,000 to dead people. Or whatever can happen over the years. But So when they're actually inputting the information, the credit card numbers are on these, and so it needs to be secured.
So the credit card numbers are on a registration form where they're prepaying for a tour or something?
Correct.
But it's not actually inputted into the computer and stored with the addresses?
No, it is not.
So we would just need to store the registration forms involved with
them. Exactly.
But people would have, inputting that, would have access to look at the credit card numbers is where the liability is.
The person who is inputting would have that access. And we would hope that that's the only person that would actually have access, that they would be given directly to that person. And
So you get a registration, do they cross that to see that the address is already in?
Yes.
And if not, they add it?
They add it. Correct. And during that period of time from about the middle of January, I want to say, we start getting a lot of calls, and the chamber gets a lot of calls and requesting to be added to that list. So we make notes and bring those names and addresses in and have those added so that when we mail that mailing out, they would have been added at that point. And also, then after they've been mailed, when I'm taking registrations, I get a lot of people who call who've seen an advertisement somewhere, and we will add their name perhaps even at that point and say, would you like to have your name added for next year? Maybe they've called in the last couple of weeks before the festival and can't make the arrangements to be here, but they want to make sure they get the information earlier than next year.
How much of that is going to be electronic?
Probably as far as the addresses, maybe 25% or 30% of those that come in during that time. Because I do most of the registrations at my house, I don't necessarily input it into, I have a tendency to write little notes and then make up a sheet and say, okay, here, I'm going to drop this off on my way by.
So all the inputting
that's just addresses.
So all the inputting be done right here at City Hall.
All the inputting into the mailing list and the maintaining of the mailing list so that it's maintained yet, that after 5 years those names drop off and that we don't duplicate. And we also have it set up so that when it prints those labels out, they are already pre-sorted by zip code. So that when those mailing labels are put on, if they're put on in order, our mailing should be ready to go.
Is all this information entered just on a regular Excel program or Microsoft program?
You know,
there's no special software.
I don't believe there is. I'm not sure because I've never had anything to do with it, and I didn't think to ask Chris that. But it's got to be something that was available to her at the irrigation district, so I can't imagine that it was a special program. And if it did turn out to be one, there's no reason why the Crane Festival can't arrange to purchase that, as long as the city agrees to have it put on their system.
Ken, do you have a comment or a question?
Well, I just question is, when do you send out that mailing list? Is it before the end of the year or after the?
It's after the end of the year. We probably would be printing these labels probably in the first or second week of January would be the goal. That's our goal this year, is to get that out and ready to go so that the actual mailing will not go out until the middle of February, sometime between the second and third week in February. And that's because I am not going to take reservations for 3 months. There is no way that 6 weeks I can handle with a little bit of relief from Marie. And we've kept it between Marie and I because under the conservation district, we are both covered under their insurance. And also, we just have always felt that because we are dealing with people's credit card numbers, if one of those would ever get used for something else, it would be detrimental to the entire city. And we have kept these very, very close to our hearts and been extremely careful with them.
Catherine, do you have a comment on this?
Yes. First of all, I guess, you know, my big picture reaction is, you know, the committee is a separate nonprofit corporation of its own right, and was incorporated to perform certain functions, which now it's asking the city to take over. From a big picture standpoint, although I know that, you know, the pressure for resources is squeezing everybody, they also squeeze the city. And I just kind of wonder, if you were to undertake this again, how many other worthy groups out there are going to request similar ministerial services from the city staff? City staff has its own job to do. So I'm a little concerned on that end. The credit card issue causes me some heartburn from a liability standpoint, just because you are adding another layer of liability by having possession and the duty to keep and maintain and protect those credit card numbers. I guess one of my questions to the festival committee would be, you know, if the council were interested in pursuing this arrangement, would they be willing to redact all of the credit card information from those lists before they give them to the city staff for the data input? Because it's one thing to have simply data input. It's another thing to have data input with access and an additional duty to, like I said, protect and maintain the confidentiality of what under federal law is considered to be very protected information.
I don't think we'd have any problem with blacking those out.
Could you physically cut it off?
I still wouldn't want them. I hate to have them cut off totally, I guess, but because we've always kind of kept them together, but because we have had times when we've had to go back and refund 2 months after the festival or something. But if they have to be, they have to be.
Even if you have to refund later, they should have their own credit cards to give you.
Right, they should give it back to us, but usually we have that on file and we just do it. And sometimes we've done it out of the goodness of our heart and surprised somebody because they called at the last minute and said, my husband had a heart attack and I can't come, and it's after the refund date, and we've gone back and said, you know, for the goodwill of the order, we're going to go ahead and refund this.
Would blacking out be good enough for the liability issue? I know that, like, with HIPAA, it's good. You can black out things on papers, but I didn't know about a credit card.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is that then our staff would not have access to that information.
However,
never be a record of the city's.
Normally, on the official blackout, as you black out, then you copy it because people can.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's what I mean. You can't have access to it at all.
Yeah.
Any more questions for Dixie? Or,
You know, and I kind of took a look at this and what we were doing for other groups besides their, I guess, 4% monies that we're giving them. For example, when they use our parks, the city picks up all the expenses for the additional restrooms, the manpower cleaning the parks, and everything else. And they've averaged from $1,000 on up to $2,500 for a 2-day event. And this is additional monies that the city's expended on top of the 4% monies that we have given the groups too. I don't see this as much of a difference as in dollar-wise additional that the Sand Hill Crane Festival is asking for additional. If we could clear the legalities of it, then I'm all for it myself to make sure it would work out good.
How soon do you need to have an answer? Could we wait 2 weeks to think about this if the council wants to?
Oh, I believe we could do that.
Is that something the council wanted to do? And so you can think about it now that we've heard what you're thinking.
Right.
And what your Sand Hill Crane people are. We'll have to bring this back in 2 weeks. And
as I say, our biggest issue is that if it were to be on any kind of a computer that system that's not backed up totally, I'm afraid we could lose it one day. I don't know how many other people have had it happen, but I know just this last summer my computer at home crashed. And
and in the meantime, could you supply us with the type of program that they use to make sure
that I can
even be compatible with the city system, or if it's something that has to be purchased.
Okay, yeah, Eamon?
Just to get back to the redacting and be clear, Dixie, and I'm not clear, so when we take the registration information, will that be in the computer or just on paper?
The information that you would get would be, the mailing list itself is in the computer, but then the registrations forms are handwritten.
Okay, so there wouldn't be a credit card number in the computer?
No.
Okay.
There are no credit card numbers in the computer whatsoever.
Okay. Thank you.
It's only the form that we use, and we just gather them up and bring them in at the end of the period of time, and it's something that can be done over a period of time. It might be 2 months after the festival before we would get them to the city, and then they would have up until the next January to get them done. So you're talking an 8 month period of time. It's not something that has to be done all at once. It's one of those things that you find a few minutes here and there, maybe, and enter a few or whatever.
How many of those do you think you have right now?
I have none on hand at this point.
Okay.
They've all been entered for this year, is my to my
okay,
knowledge.
So we don't have to store any of the previous years. So
no.
It would just be what would be coming in. So you would have to make a you would have to black it out and make a copy and bring them in.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll bring it back on the 12th. Is that what it is? Back on the 12th, Dixie.
Okay.
So then we'll have an answer for you.
I hope so.
The right answer.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks for coming and explaining it to us. So. Okay. 4.2, Bob Cox traffic sign request. Bob, you want to come up?
Thank you for letting me come here tonight and share as a concerned citizen.
Would it help if I moved it over there for the council?
Everybody see it?
I have two requests tonight that I would like to ask from the city council. The first request is that a sign be placed over on the cemetery road. I am the groundskeeper for the Best Hampton Memorial Gardens, and quite often, usually once a month, I didn't do it this summer because my son was running the cemetery, but this spring and this fall, usually once a month, I have an activity where a highway truck or some car, one way or another, will come into the cemetery, and thinking that that is a exit road, cemetery road to Highway 17. And so what I'm asking is that there would be a sign placed somewhere about Cemetery Road and 20th Street, and it would say not a through road, so that you know, for our visitors and different people that are trying to find their way back home, that they would be able to realize that that's not an exit back to the highway. Okay, so I've had some real difficulty in that area, and it would just help me as a groundskeeper to keep the trucks and the cars off my grass. So that's my first request. And my second request is I would like to bring up this discussion of this intersection of East Scutney Street and 7th Avenue. I have several part-time jobs here in the community. I'm the groundskeeper at the cemetery, and I also drive school bus. And so the way the school bus system is set up now, we have a number of buses that go to these different schools, and one of the schools that I go to every day is McFarland Middle School. And in so doing, we come around the back way through the new addition where all these new homes have been built, and we end up on Scutney Street, and then we travel west over to this intersection of 7th and Scutney. What I've been noticing for about the last year, at least a full year, I have been noticing a lot of confusion and a high volume of traffic. And then also the increased safety standards and situations that have been having with our children. And so for me, just as a concerned citizen and as a bus driver who sees this every day, I see a situation that is very concerning for me. Just that's all. And if I can just explain this here just for a minute, if you don't mind. Over here on the east side of this intersection is where the McFarland School is, and that's the way we come with our buses. And just to kind of give you a little location here, here's the Presbyterian Church and the Lunacauga, and then Kiwanis Park is over here. Now, in my opinion, and everything I'm going to say is just my opinion, okay? But in my opinion, as we come up to this intersection, and we have this three-way stop, both for Scutney and for South and the north end of 7th Street, that in my opinion, it was originally designed that way because of the small volume of traffic and the residents that live in this area over here. And that worked fine for quite a while. Over this last spring, especially in the good weather, the children really start walking a lot. And I'm saying, just in my humble estimation, I'm saying I've seen a minimum between 30 and 50 children will walk across this intersection right here, either going off this direction or coming down here and going over to these housing areas over here. So what that does, that creates a lot of concern for me as a bus driver, and there's actually 5 buses that come from McFarland School and will come over here and we'll park and we'll watch this. We have a situation, as you realize, and all of you are very familiar with this, this eastbound lane here on Scutney is unregulated. Comes up to a hill, and then they have the free traffic to go either direction they want. Then the right-hand lane here on South 7th is also free. So here's one of the issues that I think is noteworthy for your consideration. As we come here and we'll sit here, quite often we'll have buses and just regular traffic, people who pick up their children. We'll back up here all the way to a block and a half behind this intersection, just waiting to go through this intersection. Here's a situation that happened today that is really quite common. We'll come up to the intersection. When I finally get there, this evening there was 3 cars over here on this turning lane traveling south on 7th Street, and there was a car down here, and there was free traffic coming this way. Well, that was fine. Everyone was going fine. But in the regular rules of driving, that every person to your right has the right of way. But in this particular case, and this happens far more often than what we realize, these cars start signaling for the traffic over here on this westbound lane of Scutney for them to go first. So we start ending up having a little bit of confusion on who has the right of way. And then also, I've seen countless times where people are very impatient. You know, they need to go and pick up their kids right away. Traffic will be coming out of this area. And it's just a guessing by golly, and cross your fingers and pray real hard so you don't bang into somebody. As you also know, there was an accident this last spring, or this fall in October, where a pedestrian auto accident right here at this crosswalk. I understand that there's a hill right here, and that in that hill, there's a lot of children that walk this way. They will come across here, and they will come across this way, and then come up to the next crosswalk over here by the Scutney, or Lunacauga Playground, and they'll go across here. And the child, he just ran across. The sun was shining this fall in October. There was some mornings it was just as bright as could be, and there was no way the driver could have ever seen the child across the road. And so I remember that morning very clear, because as I drive, I go out towards the potholes, and I remember just how clear the sun was, just right there in your eyes. And so just out of general concern for me, just as a bus driver and as a citizen here, I really thought this through. And I said, how could we make this safer, not only for the cars, the flow of traffic, so that we don't get a big backlog here, we don't get a big backlog of traffic here, and then when traffic from here and here, they can't always see the side here, and traffic just shoots right around the corner. What would be the safest, in my estimation, what would be the safest procedure here so the traffic could flow through there? And that is by placing a 4-way stop there. I understand Mr. Amon was saying that
different ones. You have talked about this in the past, and you had much concern about this area. And one of the concerns is because of the hill right here on East Scutney coming up to this intersection. I think this is one intersection of several that we have in our community that really is quite dangerous. If I can say, over here on, well, I'll just say it this way, over on 4th and Juniper, that is an incline, and the buses go up and down that quite regularly, and that is seriously slippery. Coming up out of what we call Little Mexico, up to the railroad track on Scutney, right there, on Cunningham Road up to the railroad tracks, that's another intersection where we have to come to a stop. And another serious concern during the times of snow. Main Street is another one. 2nd and Main up there by the clinic. If you have a pedestrian walking across there, you're hung. And so one of the things that the Marion Shade, our bus transportation director, our bus boss, she says, folks, think ahead. And I think that's the thing, even with all of our community. When we look at the snow and we look at our road conditions, we do have other streets that are available to negotiate through these areas. And it's very easy, for example, like to go north on 4th Street, you could take Elm, you have different ways of coming around on the top of the high school down from Main Street. And so that's what our transportation director tells us, and I think that's something that the public is catching on to also. Because of the snow, because of the large volume of traffic going through the intersections around our schools, the problem really is just in the morning and in the afternoon. Because the rest of the time, in my estimation, this intersection is just fine. But I think the growth of our population and the students that are walking to and from school is great enough now that I think it deserves your attention to look at this and really begin to discuss the confusion of who has the right of way and the backup and the children's safety. You know, we're always going to have the snow issue, so, and we have several others like that that I think that, in my estimation, I would like to see a four-way stop placed here so that it would be safe at all times. Now, in the winter, granted, you're going to have a lot less children walking. But it is in the fall and it is in the spring when the children do the most of their walking to school. And to me, I think that's the highest level of concern that we should have for our children. But I've seen the children running in between the cars and doing all the things that they do. So that's my request and my proposal. Do you have any questions? Or?
I travel that road every morning. After I drop off my son, it's a tough one. At the junior high, I drop off my boys and then I go straight out the same road. That stop sign and just kind of. Well, but you're right, and that traffic that's coming off 7th, they start waving you through.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I travel that every morning too. There's been times I've pulled up to the stop sign headed west, but also. And everything that we've kind of created in there, Scutney has become a collector street. Everybody uses it. Mm-hmm. And I've seen cars all the way down to as far as the next intersection. I think at one time I counted 12 cars coming up that hill. I do see concerns with putting a stop sign there, especially in the winter, cars trying to take off that hill, especially if we got that long line of cars again. They're just going to either bump into each other coming down or somebody's going to get stuck there on the hill and can't take off and cause more of a problem. It's an intersection that does need more looking at in the future. And I think one thing that might eventually help it is when we eventually connect 7th Street and Columbia Street to take some of that traffic flow off of Scutney. But that's a future solution, I think, for that street.
Yes.
And then we could look at possibly lighting that or making that a two-way stop somehow. That might help. But for now, it is a tough situation, and I think it's going to be a tough solution, too, finding some way that would work.
I realize, if I may comment to your comment, I realize that change in this area would be really drastic to a lot of people. We would get a lot of letters in the newspaper, you know, oh man, what are you guys doing here? But in reality, this intersection, because of the high volume of traffic, really needs some attention that for the safety of not only the cars, but the safety of the students, and especially in the fall and in the spring of the school year, is when we have such a high probability of accidents. And like I say, I'm not making any judgments about the one that already has happened, but it was inevitable. I mean, all of us drivers that go through there, we just say, oh, hold your breath as we go through there. So I think it's very important that, you know, we educate our public and say, use alternative roads when there is snow on a hill, you know, and take another intersection.
Yeah, I'll bring up corner of 14th and Nash.
Yes.
No, that was a hard change for a lot of people, but actually that was one of the best moves.
Yes.
And traffic moves through there really good now in the morning.
Yes.
And it was a really good move. And there's still a few people bent out of shape about it, but
yeah, yes,
as they've had the choice to go around it or obey the signs. And,
yes.
But it's been a good move. Like I said, the traffic flow, my problem is twice a day.
Yes.
Another one is Ash and 10th. You could sit there for 4 or 5 minutes sometimes before you could cross Ash Street if you're driving down 10th.
Yes.
It gets really tough sometimes.
But fortunately in that area, the distinction there is that that's closer to the junior high, where it seems like those students are just a little bit more attentive than what they are with the Ludicauga school, where them little buggers, they just go racing across there, and they're just like a dart, man.
Yeah. I beg to differ with you on that one. Those junior high students could care less what's coming down the road. They'll walk right out in front of you.
Well, I'm not denying that, because I drive the same road. You're right.
Let's break this into two pieces. Chief Dannegan and the Public Works Director Clemens concurs with not a through road sign. Is the council okay with that? Do we have to vote on this, put it into a form of motion?
No, this is not a speed limit sign, so
okay.
We don't have to vote on that
one. So is that fine with council, we put that up?
I'd recommend two signs, one that says no trucks, and two, the other one that says no access. And, you know,
on the cemetery road. Oh, I fully agree with that.
You don't want dead end.
We're on cemetery.
Because that was actually listed on a map search I did as a way out of town to go out Cemetery Road.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
But yeah, that should be signed. Yeah, that's a good one.
Mayor, to clarify, the council member before said no access and not a through road.
We would want to have no access.
Yeah.
Is that the consensus, or is it not a through road?
We need two signs.
No trucks, no access, or not a through road.
I think not a through road is most clear.
Yeah. Yes.
Because 14, no
14's already posted for no tracks.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank
so
you.
We'll get that up. And then now let's move to Scutney right here in 7th. Any thoughts or comments on that one you feel like we should talk about? How about if we remove the stop sign on the east side of Scutney, so it's going to put it over on 7th?
I see both points. I can see where it's going to be an issue on the hill with when the weather's bad. And I can also see where it would be good to have a four-way stop. However, I don't think either of those, either way we go, is going to take care of the issue of the kids. And really, what it comes down to is the school ought to have crossing guards on that block, because there's so many of them crossing and they don't pay attention and they run right out, and that's
I believe that would be a good. They put one at
because
four, I mean at 7th and Ash.
You can
right
put
now. And I do. Yeah. They have one at the crosswalk that you show further down, but I don't see as many as kids using that one as they do the 7th Street one. So that would be a good thing that we could bring up to the school district sometime.
And even with a four-way stop, I mean, that's going to control the cars, but the cars are still going to have a hard time knowing who's got to go, because this one's got kids going in front of it, and then this one thinks they're next, and, you know, you need to control the kids and then control the traffic.
I don't know if there's enough room, but that is an ideal spot with the congestion that's going to happen over the next few years for a roundabout.
Yes. So leave it as it is and contact the schools, what I'm hearing from the council.
You're eventually going to have to do something. You're going
to
have to. Address.
But I think the first thing you need to do is control the kids. And I think if you control the kids, it wouldn't back up the way it is, and the people wouldn't be waving you through and doing all that.
Would it?
I think that would help.
It would help some.
Yeah.
And after the accident in October, there was a monitor there for several weeks. And then it began to be hit and miss. And then there's not been one now there for about the last two or three weeks.
But it just flat out needs to be a manned intersection. And I know that takes, you know, right now they're using volunteer kids, but there should be adults out there with the kids or adults out there monitoring the crossing, because it's just gotten to be, I don't even drive down that way if I can avoid during those hours at all.
Yes.
So I think that's the first issue you need to take care of, and then we can go back and look and see how it's doing and deal with the stop signs.
Is the school district has decided then that the buses come up to McFarland and then come through there and then come back down Scutney to 7th, right?
No. What the buses are doing from McFarland, we're traveling south down to Scutney. Then on Scutney, we travel west all the way to 4th Street.
Yeah, all the way to 4th Street.
And then we loop
around. Is there any way that they can come down 4th or down 7th and cross that intersection, go to the high school or the junior high first, and then go back down Ash and go back around the other way instead of being at that intersection when the kids get out? Mm-hmm. The school buses come by early.
Yes.
And they're through that intersection before there are any kids there. If they went around the other way, they'd be through the intersection and then back down by the time kids get to the intersection.
Yes.
And the second point, I guess, is the intersection that has been, in my experience, there wasn't anybody lived up there east of 7th, and there wasn't anybody lived south of 7th, but they still don't. So it was just easy enough just to make a turn because you only had the one thing. Now, but it seems to me it's going to get worse. The more people that are built out there, when they put Scutney Street straight through, they're going to be coming off the highway and straight down that way. You're going to have a mess down there.
Yes, yes.
And people aren't going to say, well, I'll drive around three blocks just to get around that. I just don't know about that. And I know traction issue in the wintertime is a problem. There's no way around that. But it's going to be a more difficult intersection as the city builds west east and the second school goes in. There's going to be people up and down that intersection.
Yeah.
But I still think maybe if they went the opposite way around, the buses went the opposite way around, they'd be through that intersection before the kids get out.
Mayor, just a comment. Mm-hmm. A suggestion, and Mr. Deaver's right, and as that area continues to grow, maybe now is the time to spend a little bit of money and have a traffic engineer look at it and make a recommendation to the council. And maybe we'll end up with a roundabout.
Well, this is a very unique intersection, not only in our community. I mean, it's the only one that's it's unique to itself. And I don't think I've seen it anywhere else where the people making a left turn have the right of way. And I'm sure, as Dan mentioned, it was because nobody went straight through. There was nothing out there. And the solution might actually be to take out a stop sign and make it a two-way stop. And that'll keep traffic from backing up. And just make it like a regular two-way intersection, stop it on 7th. And with the caveat that it might be a spot to have one of our solar school zone 20-mile-an-hour signs that are timed to come on during when kids are through it. So we might be going the other way. We might take out that and just make it, if you made it a two-way stop sign there, they wouldn't back up on Scudney because they'd just drive right through and open up that intersection and get rid of all that free left turn and free right turn and all that baloney.
Why don't the buses go from McFarland down Ash like they always used to and then just take a right down 7th and go to the high school that way instead of going that great big circle coming around?
The reason why we've changed that was because of the students coming not only out of the high school, but just the parents coming to pick up their children on 7th Street. There's no control or traffic signs on that road. So quite often, over the years, and I've driven bus now for about 7 years, it's very common for us to back up all the way from Ash and 7th. I mean, just have a solid line of cars all the way up to the high school. And so to alleviate that congestion there, that's why we made the suggestion just for those for McFarland to loop around and to get away from that, because you have also the Ludicaga buses that will turn and go on 7th Street north back up to the high school. And then you also have Scutney Springs buses coming down Ash, and then they join in on 7th Street also. So it's quite a congestion.
They don't come down Ash from Scutney anymore, do they? They come when they go by my house.
Well, they may because
they go
there
up
was
around the other, and then they come back around and go, and I think they go down Juniper.
They may do that. Because, like I say, I've just been right over here at McFarland for the last year. And so it was going up Ash Street, and they were coming down, and they may have changed it just recently. But that's the reason why. It's because of the congestion there on 7th Street, where it's just too much traffic at those two times of the day.
Maybe I'd make Juniper and Ash four-way stops.
I guess I agree with Mark right here. That's what I'd like to see, is pull that stop sign on Ludicaga right there and stick it over on 7th on the north side of the street, because we're heading that direction. There's so much growth going out there. Mm-hmm. That's where all the housing and everything's going. I think we've got to put some consideration into it or think about it or whatever, but you know, I think eventually we're going to be there, I would think.
I still think you need to man the intersection. The school district needs to do something about the kids, because I have driven down through there, and with the stop signs or not, those kids don't pay attention, and you know, with no crossing guards or anything, they just dart out in front of you, or it's a constant stream. And I can see why people get frustrated, because you know, they're sitting there waiting and kids just keep coming and they don't pay attention to you, or they dart right out in front of you if you start moving, and the school district needs to do something about that too.
Okay.
Are you suggesting a letter from council or from the mayor to the school district, and perhaps you can work with your supervisor?
Yes.
We can address that. There are pedestrian walk to school grant monies at the state level called the Walk to School Program. And if the school district has a plan, then we can partner with that and perhaps get somebody to look at this intersection in a big way because of growth, because of the kids, and make some recommendations from a professional standpoint, if you will, and make a recommendation back to the council.
Sound good?
Supervision at the intersection for kids. I talked to George and I talked to Gary Street about the one up at Scutney, because I pulled up there, there was 5 cars on each 3 streets trying to get back and forth, and here's the crossing guard stands out there with his little sign, and I noticed kids coming out of the school walking all the way across the playground or the lawn. And they wait for them to go, and there's 15 cars waiting at that intersection. They don't stop them. You know? And there was an adult standing there.
They've been better about that this year.
Well,
that was after
the sideline went in.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, there was an adult there. So it needs somebody that's, you know, you can't have kids doing it, because they'll not, you know, it had to be an adult. So.
They should have adult supervision there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
They do. They have
stop the kids and let the cars go by for a minute.
One person for both crossings.
Yeah. No. Okay.
So we want to get a traffic
I kind of go with Eamon.
Go with Eamon? That sounds good to everybody?
Yes.
That thought?
So it's a letter and plus partnership with the school and with somebody to review it at a professional level. Thank you.
And I think the idea of possibly changing that lets Scrutiny be a through street through there, like Mark says. I think that's the alternative for right now, anyway, to take care of that situation.
But then you're going to have all those people backing up that are coming still.
Back up anyway, so which way are you going?
Okay, we'll do that, and then we can look at the intersection recording, what we come up with.
Okay.
So, from the professionals, I guess.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Bob, for bringing that to our attention. Okay, 4.3, public hearing on the 2012 budget. Please bear with us as we progress through the legal and technical aspects of the public hearing. This public hearing is now open at 7:22 p.m. and it's being held to receive a staff report and receive public comments on the city's 2012 budget. This public hearing is required by state law. The 2012 budget has been developed and will now ask the finance officer to present a report. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm going to do an overview of the budget that we worked on 2 weeks ago. There hasn't been one change to this since then. In other words, this is what we carved out in our work in the council meeting on the 14th. And this is an overview, so there won't be any detail. And I'll just go through it on my computer here.
The column to the far right is the 2012 budget. And the first budget is the general fund. It shows a beginning fund balance of almost $1.4 million, a revenue of about $4.3 million, and expenditures of $4.6 million. And that leaves an estimated ending fund balance of almost $1.1 million in the general fund. The street fund starts out at almost $500,000. Revenue projections are $1.5 million. Expenditures are nearly 1.8, with an ending fund balance of 203,000. Then we have the Park and Recreation Fund, and this is the fund where we have set aside money, $200,000 for a skateboard park. And this will be the final year of our contributions for a community center, which will total 300,000. So this fund will have $500,000 in it. We have the Real Property Fund. Our mitigation monies that come from permits, building permits, goes into this fund. And so we have revenue projections in that fund based on that, plus some small interest earnings. And that fund will end up with a little over $300,000 in it. The Life Reserve Fund is starting out at almost $74,000. We're putting $10,000, we do a $10,000 transfer, and about $750 in interest earnings. So that'll be at almost $85,000 at the end of the year. The Fire Equipment Fund is starting the year at 81. Our revenue projections are at $20,500, and expenditure is the capital request from the fire department for our vehicle for an SUV for $32,000. That will leave about $70,000 in that fund. The Water Utility Reserve Fund, we're going to put almost $900,000 in that fund this year, which will bring it back up to the $1.7 million. We used about $859,000 on the Main Street project at the Water Fund. So it's good to see that the balance on that coming. The Sewer Reserve Fund, we're starting the year at about $2.5 million, and we plan on putting almost $700,000 in there for a total of $3.2 million. And once again, this is building towards our mechanical plant in the future. And we have, I believe, about another 5 years on this permit. So we anticipate we could be at $6 or $7 million by the time we need to start making plans to build. And I believe with the rates, what we're doing with the rates, and what we have in reserves, it will show the state that we're serious about building a mechanical plant, and we hope to get some help to build it.
solid waste utility reserve fund start at 160. It will probably come in at about 162,000. The street reserve fund beginning at 316,000 and ending at around 339,000. The donation fund, I usually don't budget this, and yet every year we have to do shop with the cop, and so I have to go in for a budget amendment. So I thought I would budget it next year, and then I won't have to come back to council for a budget amendment. So that's why I'm going to the donation fund. The tourism fund starts at about 41.4. We expect revenue to be around 46.2. And our expenditure requests are for a total of 47,147. And the ending fund balance in that and is required by council to be at $40,000. We're maintaining that. The real estate excise tax fund, starting at 392, we expect to have about 38,000 in revenue and to end at about $430,000. The utility tax fund, we'll be starting at about almost 440,000. We expect revenue to be about a little over 1.4, close to 1.59, and expenditures at 1.5 with an ending balance of almost $400,000. The sidewalk construction fund starts at around 11 and ends at about any plans for expenditures in that. Main Street, there is no budget in 2000. That project is completed. Then we have debt service funds. These are amounts that have to be used for these funds to pay debt service. Some of it comes from the utility tax fund, some of it comes from the street fund, etc. The water utility fund. We expect to start at about 1.2 million. Now we don't normally maintain that kind of a fund balance, but for the last, I think, almost 3 years, we have budgeted a new well, and we haven't had the opportunity to dig that, to actually build that well yet, so we continue to carry that over. And so that there is a plan for next year for building a well. So we are going to spend the fund balance down to about $200,000, and that will include some transfer into the reserve fund as well. Is the sewer utility fund? Starting out at about 224, revenue is expected to be about 927,000, and expenditures, $1,076,000. And you might wonder why expenditures are so high. That's because we make such a large transfer into the reserve fund. We're putting all of our reserves into the reserve fund to build for the mechanical. The solid waste utility fund, we expect it to start out at about 158,000. We have a little over $1 million in revenue projections and about $1.1 million in expenditures. Now every year I try to spend down the balance and I seem to fail at that. I'm not quite sure what that's about. This fund is just a self-generating thing. We haven't had any increase in our solid waste rates here in the time I've been here in over 5 years. And yet we still can't seem to use up the reserves in this fund. It's kind of funny. What it looks like is the total of our estimated beginning fund balances is about $9 million, with about $13.5 million in revenue projections and $13.7 million in expenditure requests, for an estimated ending balance of $8.9 million. And then right here, you can see where the cursor is. We have a budgeted ending fund balances. Our total budget is for the year is that we're asking council for is $20,465,362. And one of the reasons that's high is I budget the ending fund balance in the reserve fund. Because if I don't budget them, they never show up on any of the reports that come out of our accounting software. And so I budget that number every year so that it stands out and we can see it in all the reports. That's my story, I'm sticking to it.
Thank you, Mike. And now we'll ask for public testimony, questions or objections to be heard from the citizens. Please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone, state your name and address for the record, and allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. Okay, since there were no public comments, I will now close the time for public testimony at 7:31 on that one. Okay, pull down more on this. Come on. Do any council members have comments or questions at this time for Mike? Mark, go ahead.
Would you go back to your numbers, please? Go to the very top. What's your philosophy on, normally on a budget, the ending fund balance for 2011 would be the beginning fund balance for 2012? And I see yours don't match in almost every instance.
Well, this is the 2011 budget. When we did the 2011 budget, our expectation, this was our expectation here, right here. Well, it never comes out that way. It's always different. So the beginning fund balance in 2012 is taken from my year-end estimate. I actually, maybe that would have been a wise thing for me to do, is actually put my estimates for year-end in here. It would have been my year-end 2011 estimate. And that beginning number is what my estimate is going to be for my ending number in 2011.
Okay.
So that would be the explanation for the difference.
So the when we did the 2011 budget in 2010, we guessed at $1.2 million. However, your latest projections are it'll be almost $1.4 million.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And what I'm getting to, and if you'd also scroll down to the so you'll see that's a couple hundred thousand more than the estimate, and the utility tax fund.
Right here?
Yes. So we were estimated at 143, but your projection is 439. And what I'm trying to do is find out where our $950,000 windfall went.
Okay.
And I'm guessing you stuck that half to the general fund and half to the utility fund.
That's correct. That is correct.
So is that a major reason why your projected for 2012 is a lot higher than our estimated in 2011?
That's correct.
Okay. So my point being, the final, if you go back up to the top again, if we were projected to be $1.2 million and ended up at $1.4 million, that's $200,000 to the good. However, this windfall was a $450,000. So to me, we've absorbed a couple hundred thousand dollars of that windfall, just got, and without that, we would actually, our beginning balance for 2012 would be less than we would estimate it.
Yes, that is correct.
Which mean either revenues were below estimate or expenditures were above, meaning we weren't spending within budget.
But that was a good analysis.
And okay, Nick, could you go all the way down to the bottom again? I'm going to have you tell me your story again. I'm not following why expenditures are $13.7 million, yet we say we have a $20 million budget.
Okay.
Tell me that again.
Okay, see this part right here? That is the total, excuse me.
Yeah, that's
this part right here. That's the total of the expenditures. Okay. And then this part right down here is those reserve funds. Those aren't expenditures, they're actually ending fund balance.
Okay.
And so I handle them separately and then I bring them all together.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't know if that meets generally accepted accounting practices, but it sounds like a huge budget. That's all I have.
Any other council members? Okay. I will now close the public hearing at 7:27. Okay. Oh, you're right. 7:37. Sorry about that. Thanks, Mark. All right. Got to get another screen up here just a second. Come on. My mouse broke on me today, so. Right when I got here. Come on. Okay. Purpose only. Okay. So there is no motion on this one. I thought there was for some reason.
Next one.
Must be the next one. Okay. Okay. 4.4, ordinance to adopt the 2012 budget. Mike again. Oops. What happened to Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I think we've pretty much discussed the budget, and it is everything that we worked on 2 weeks ago. And what I think I'll do is I'll just scroll down through the ordinance itself. The ordinance has changed a little bit this year. I included revenue. I got to looking in the BARS manual, and the BARS manual does require revenue. And so I'll just scroll down through that really quickly.
General fund is broken up into all the different areas in the general fund, and they're listed separately, and capital is broken out. So at the end of the general fund, you have the total general fund budget and the revenue for the general fund. And then as you go down through each of these others, it's the same thing. You see the revenue on the left and the expenditure on the right. And then the total on the right is what we're asking council for. The budget appropriation for 2012 is $20,465,362. And that's the 2012 budget.
Questions for Mike? Okay, do I hear a motion to adopt the 2012 budget as presented?
I so move.
Second. First. Mark Snyder, second. Any further comments or discussion? Mark?
Generally, I feel it's a pretty good budget. It's a little too much fluff for me again. Specifically, I don't agree with the $10,000 for fireworks. I don't agree with the $10,000 as the start of the process to start breaking up our new sidewalks to put trees in to call it beautification. And I adamantly disagree with $50,000 to help us get more natural gas when that is totally undefined how that money will be used or what it will go for.
Okay. Any other comments or discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed the same?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Okay. All right, next is executive session. The council will now adjourn into an executive session pursuant to RCW 4.30.110(1) and B, to consider the selection of a site or the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase. The executive session is expected to last 30 minutes. No action will be taken during the executive session. Council requests that the following staff remain for the executive session: city administrator and city attorney. So we'll be back into session at about 10 after 8. Public session. Thank you, everybody.